Welcome to the Pet Perspective. This week we are talking to vet in practice, Dr. Ben Simpson-Vernon, who also posts social media content on all things pets under the handle Ben the Vet. And he's going to be talking to us today about everything you need to know before you get a puppy. Thanks for joining me today, Ben.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, really good to, glad to take part.
You were saying that this might be quite cathartic for you because usually you don't get to speak to owners until after the puppy's been brought home. But today you're going to be giving them some top tips for pre-puppy purchase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's when it's too late to really have any kind of influence on steer on what pet owners are doing when, you know, in that stage when they're thinking of getting a dog. You know, by the time they bring the dog in, you know, for its first vaccine to us. So, great to have an opportunity to give a bit of advice.
And if anyone listening does have a friend or family member who is thinking of getting a puppy, they should definitely forward them this episode. So I guess before we talk about the actual puppies themselves, what should an owner expect or consider before even thinking about what kind of puppy they want? How much time should they be expecting to spend? How much money should they be expecting to spend?
Yeah, so that's the key thing. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of issues now where people have bought, it's been in the news a lot, bought puppies during lockdown and then perhaps, you know, have gone back to working at the office or whatever, aren't at home as much and haven't got as much time to devote to looking after the puppy. So time is a really important consideration. So, you know, you need to think in your ordinary day, have you got time to walk the dog, you know, twice a day? Really, most dogs are going to need walking for. Have you got the time to devote to their training, to, you know, particularly when they're young, socializing them with other dogs, you know, to take them to the vets, to take them, you know, if they need to be groomed. A dog is a big time investment. So that's the first consideration. And then the other thing to consider is money. So the PDSA estimate that over a dog's lifetime, they could cost you, obviously it varies quite a lot, but they could easily cost you over 30 grand in the course of their life. So, your monthly outgoings with a dog are going to be, obviously you're going to have to feed the dog. A big dog is going to eat a lot more food than a tiny little 2 kilo chihuahua. So, you know, you need to factor the dog's size in, things just like, you know, toys, poo bags, leads, things like that. Regular flea and worming, their annual health checks and vaccinations. Are you going to need a dog walker, or might you need to put the dog into kennels if you're going away? And then the other thing to consider is pet insurance as well. So you're going to need at least, the PDSA would estimate as a bare minimum, £60-70 a month. But for a lot of dog owners, that's realistically going to be easily a couple of £100.
Yes, I don't think I realised when I got my puppy suit how much pet care was going to be when I started, you know, working out of home again. And I think some months I spend more on pet sitting and dog walking than I do on food for myself. It's very, very easy to rack up bills.
Yeah. And even if you're going away on holiday, you know, a lot of people don't factor in the cost of paying for a dog sitter or putting the dog in kennels. You know, it's going to add easily a few hundred pounds onto the cost of your holiday. So you need to be prepared for that.
So I've decided that I can afford a puppy. I know I can financially afford it and I have enough time. How do I go about actually choosing the puppy that's right for me? Lots of people maybe choose a puppy that's cute or they think doesn't need much exercise. But what kind of things should I be looking for or thinking about when choosing a breed?
So it's a really, really bad idea to pick a dog based on the way it looks. So a lot of dogs that have more extreme kind of characteristics and that are more exaggerated, they come with a health trade-off, those kind of physical characteristics. And a lot of the, one of the most popular kind of groups of dogs that at the moment are the brachycephalic breeds, the flat-faced breeds like the French Bulldogs and the Pugs. And those dogs, we're naturally kind of drawn to them because they have these kind of baby-like physical features that we find cute, but unfortunately they have a health trade-off for the dog. So cuteness definitely not the
primary thing we should be considering. So, you know, we need to be thinking about the dog's temperament and, you know, how they're really going to fit into your sort of family life. So not going by physical appearance.
We had Dr. Emma Milne on the Pet Perspective right back when we first started, actually, talking about Brachy breeds and, you know, this extreme breeding and then the dangers that come with them. But it is true, one of the most popular breeds about French bulldogs and pugs. So instead of picking a puppy that we like the look of then, that looks like a cute little squidgy baby, how can we be sure that we are focusing on the health of the puppy when we're choosing a puppy?
So one of the, I guess one of the first things to think about is the appearance of that dog. Is it exaggerated in some way? Because it's extreme kind of physical appearance that really can lead to some of these health issues. So, you know, does the breed have a flat face? Does, you know, the breeds like the Dachshunds with a long back, they're prone to spinal problems. Breeds with a more moderate kind of appearance are not so prone to. So that's one thing. And then it's the, you know, sort of genetic health as well. There are some dog breeds that are, unfortunately, have a very small gene pool, and certain health problems are very common in the breed. So like with the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and there is a type of heart disease that they are very prone to, and most older Cavaliers develop a heart murmur at some point as they get older, and many of them will go into heart failure. So I guess a lot of that, you know, you're not gonna, there are so many different breeds of dog and so much variety that, you know, there's a lot of potentially a lot of pitfalls. So it's a really good idea if you're thinking about getting a dog. I mean, firstly, talk to just other people, talk to friends. You know, a lot of people pick a dog breed based on sort of recommendations and, you know, dog breeds perhaps they've had growing up. But if you're kind of maybe settling on a few dog breeds, it's a good idea to speak to a vet or a vet nurse just to get a bit of input. So a lot of vets would be happy to, or nurses would be happy to give that kind of advice. Or it's a good idea to set up a sort of pre-purchase consultation with a vet and to discuss some of those things. You know, it might cost you £30 or £40, but in the long run, that could save you a lot of money in vet bills.
That's actually a really good idea, having a chat with a vet before you've even got your puppy, just to see, you know, is the breed I'm thinking of the best fit for me?
Yeah. And absolutely. And I mean, if you have decided that you want, you know, for example, if you decided you really, really want to get a French bulldog, you know, there are ways to, there is health testing that means, yeah, will reduce the risk that they'll have some of their common issues. So there is a grading system for the some of the breathing issues that they're prone to, breeders can you know, carry out on their dogs, and so, you know, if you're thinking of getting a French bulldog, ask if they've been, you know, what health testing they've had. So that's something else to think about.
And is it important to research what kind of lifestyle a breed would suit me? Say I'm work 3 days a week in the office and I do have lots of time on the weekend, you know, how can I go about figuring out what breed is going to fit into that lifestyle?
So yeah, I guess, you know, if you're not going to have a lot of time to be exercising a dog, then, you know, you're not going to want to get a dog breed like a Vizsla, for example, that is, you know, really high energy, and, you know, you may need to walk for you know, an hour and a half at, you know, every day to you know, to let them expend their energy. You know, if you might be better suited to having a, you know, smaller breed of dog, or, you know, a terrier or whatever. So yeah, that's one of the main things, is having the time to exercise them.
I definitely underestimated the amount of energy a collie mix would have to expend. Yeah. So my puppy is a collie mix, and oh my goodness, the first 2 years of his life he was how can I put this diplomatically, an interesting character. Lots and lots of walks and running.
Yeah, I think there's particularly obviously the sort of cockapoos and poodle crosses are really popular, and they can be lovely dogs, but they, you know, the cockapoos, you know, a poodle and cockapoos are two of the most sort of energetic intelligent kind of breeds that they are, and they need a lot of stimulation. And you know, we're certainly starting to see some behavioural issues in some of these dogs that are not, you know, their needs are not being met. So, you know, it's not a case of just tiring them out. You know, it can have a negative impact on their behaviour and lead mm-hmm. to, you know, lead to issues down the line.
How can I make sure that I'm getting a puppy from a reputable breeder? What kind of questions do I need to be asking?
So, I mean, I think one of the key things is that any reputable breeder should be wanting to ask you a lot of questions. So, you know, they only want to, you know, to send their dog to a home that they know is going to be giving them the care that they need. So, you know, firstly, they need to be interested in you. And then other things to consider would be, yeah, depending on the breed, what kind of health testing do they do? You know, if it's a Labrador, then, you know, ideally you're going to want to know if they do the sort of hip and elbow testing. So to check for some of the common issues they have. So that will be very breed dependent. And then, you know, there's certainly red flags. When it comes to breeders, you know, if they're saying they can deliver the puppy to you, or they won't show you the puppy and the mum together, or you know, some of these puppy farm breeders, they've got kind of very slick operations, and they'll have you know, they've been known to have a dummy mum there with the puppy, so it all looks very legitimate. And so, you know, you also need to be considering, is the, you know, the puppy's interacting with the mum. The mum should be, if you're seeing the mum with a litter of puppies, she'll be watching them all the time. And, you know, if you're picking them up, then she's going to be interested in you. So, you know, you need to be thinking about that sort of thing as well. So one really good resource is to look at the puppy contract, which you can find online via the RSPCA website and a few other sort of veterinary organisations. That is quite a foolproof sort of document that you can use to really encourage you to ask the right kind of questions. But any reputable breeder should be happy signing that document. So that's a really good resource.
We hear sometimes, you know, stories of people who they go to see a puppy and they take it home the same day. Is that encouraged? Would you suggest people should see the puppy a few times in advance, or how would you go about it?
Yeah, ideally you should see the puppy a few times and take a bit of time to really make a decision, and not be pressured to make an impulsive kind of decision. I mean, I've certainly come across pet owners that have seen a dog and they've been worried that they're not in perhaps very good condition, and they may be worried that they're not being looked after by the breeder, and they feel compelled to part with cash and buy the puppy mm-hmm. there and then to sort of save them. But looking at the sort of bigger picture, that's not that might really sort of tug at your heartstrings. You know, that's not a good thing to be doing. You know, it's obviously going to be encouraging irresponsible breeding.
It becomes a bit of a vicious circle then, doesn't it? The short-term intentions are well-meaning, but in terms of perpetuating a system of unethical breeding, not the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about vaccinations. Some reports have said that the number of owners choosing to vaccinate their puppies is actually increasing slightly in the last few years, which suggests that there's some education kind of going on. How important is it that puppies receive their primary vaccinations?
It's really, really important. So, you know, in the last few years, where I work in sort of East London, Essex area, we have been seeing more cases of parvovirus. And it is young puppies that are particularly susceptible to that infection. And we usually see it in, you know, most commonly in puppies under sort of 4 months of age, but mm-hmm. almost, you know, the vast majority of cases are in dogs under a year old. So you know, really important that they get those initial vaccinations. And the exact kind of age that they get them will vary depending on what vaccine your veterinary practice uses. But it's usually a first vaccine around eight weeks of age, and it's either a two or three course vaccination.
I mean, we've seen some heartbreaking cases also as a pet insurer of parvo, of how devastating it can be to puppies. So, yes, definitely, I agree with you there. And how about flea and worming treatments then? When should new puppy parents start to think about that? And how important is it to stay on top of flea and worming?
Yeah, so straight away, and really, I mean, that's another kind of indicator of a good breeder as well, that they've started that sort of process before you get the puppy. So, you know, they should have been wormed, you know, before the age of 8 weeks. So it's really common that most puppies will carry roundworms that they get from their mum. So these worms, they get them across the placenta and through the milk. Those worms rarely make them sort of severely ill, but they can sort of stunt their growth. They can cause diarrhea in some puppies, but perhaps of most kind of significance, they are so the most common sort of roundworm they get, called Toxocara, is zoonotic. So that's which means it's an infection that humans can pick up from dogs, and that's particularly anyone who's immunosuppressed or young children will be more vulnerable to that infection. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the most important reasons for worming a dog. And then flea prevention, you know, will depend on your dog's kind of lifestyle, but you will, you know, if your dog is going out and about, you know, there's a, you know, they're going to be at risk of picking up fleas. The problem is, once they get fleas and have an infestation and they get into your house and lay eggs in your carpets and soft furnishings, they can be really hard to get rid of. So that's why flea prevention is generally recommended. And then the other thing to consider would be lungworm, which is really the only a worm or parasite they can pick up in this country that really can make them very severely unwell. Mm-hmm. And that's something they can pick up from eating slugs and snails. So that can only be prevented with prescription parasite prevention, which your vet would be able to provide. So definitely something to discuss with them. That does vary across the country. So lungworm isn't, you know, it's a particular risk in certain parts of the country. So where I work in London, it's quite a high risk, but there'll be other parts of the country where it's not such a high risk and may not need to be prevented. But to speak to your vet.
Touching on the point about the lungworm prevention being prescription, there are non-prescription flea and worming treatments available online. And this is a little bit of a point of contention. What's your opinion? Are they worth it? Do they work?
So the worming products, on the whole, for roundworms and tapeworms are generally very effective, non-prescription ones, but it's the flea prevention that generally isn't as reliable. So we do see quite a lot of animals come in that still manage to pick up fleas, having had an over-the-counter sort of cheaper flea product. And also you're not going to get that lungworm prevention with an over-the-counter treatment. So whatever you get from your vets is going to be more expensive, but in terms of lungworm prevention and fleas, you know, it's going to be more effective.
And speaking from experience, my dog Soot did have fleas a couple of years ago. Absolute nightmare to get rid of them. Oh my goodness, yeah. They are unkillable. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, the problem is once the eggs get into your house, you can't easily kill the eggs, and so they can lay dormant in carpets and around the house for 2 years even, so they can take a really long time to get rid of them.
It was a nightmare. I had to fumigate my entire house several times, and will never be letting his flea treatment lapse ever again. I learned the hard way. I'm now on the ball every month, same day.
Yeah.
getting him treated. Yeah. Or it's every 3 months. Oh no, every month.
Every month, yeah.
So I want to talk about two more things before we wrap up. I want to talk a little bit about obesity and then touch briefly on puppy behaviour. I know you're not a behaviourist, but you must get an awful lot of new puppy parents coming in a little bit stressed about the way their puppy's behaving. But before we go on to that, obesity is a big problem, and it often begins in puppyhood. What would you say to a new puppy parent to help them really be thinking about the long-term health of their pet in terms of diet and nutrition and weight?
Yeah, so I think it's really easy to fall into bad habits early on. And so you know, a treat needs to be a treat. I think the thing with nutrition and dog food, and you know, that's an easy way that, that pet owners can treat their dogs. You know, one of the things that I have a lot of power over. Make sure that you're only treating a dog. You know, you're only giving them a reward for positive behaviour, that you're not just giving them treats willy-nilly, and get into good habits with measuring out how much food you're giving them, whatever you choose to feed them. But make sure you're, you know, feeding them the correct quantity, not just feeding them ad lib or giving them extra just because they're sort of asking for it. You know, you need to be feeding them the right sort of amount from an early age. So get into good habits. Pay dividends in the long run.
I read something, in fact we included it on a past podcast, that some estimates say 1 in 2 or 50% of pets are actually overweight or obese. So we're so used to seeing them, we don't really realize that they're a little bit chubby.
Most of the time when, you know, when we tell an owner in a, you know, a dog comes in for its vaccinations and we say, he's a little bit overweight, put it nicely, he's a bit chunky, then more often than not they are a bit sort of surprised. They didn't think that they're overweight. So I think it definitely has been normalized, but it has a massive impact on their health. So, you know, overweight dogs have been shown to have a shortened lifespan, and being overweight predisposes them to a lot of health conditions, as with humans, so heart disease, joint problems, arthritis, you know, particularly important with the flatter face breeds like the Frenchies and the Bulldogs, to keep them trim, because of the airway problems that they can have, and difficulty breathing, and you know, the fact they are more prone to heat stroke as well. And if they're overweight, that risk is going to be even more elevated. So really important to keep them trim.
I know when you get a young puppy, they're often kind of chubby, and it's why it's called puppy fat, right? And then there'll be a point where perhaps the puppy fat doesn't disappear and it's just turned into a bit of an overweight younger dog. At what point should an owner start to be looking at their puppy and think, okay, is this a healthy weight for my puppy? Are there things that they can look for or feel?
I think it's really, it's fairly... you know, really when they reach maturity, and that the dogs start to become, you know, sort of noticeably overweight. You know, although I say it's good to get into good habits early, actually it's quite hard to, you know, we don't see many obese 6-month-old dogs. So it's really when they reach maturity, maybe sort of a year old, that they start to become a bit overweight. So you know, to get advice from your vet, you know, they'll tell you what sort of weight, you know, they think your dog should be. It's not an exact science, so we go more by body condition. So look online, if you search a body condition score, and you'll be able to find a chart which will show you what sort of condition we're looking for. So really what we're looking for is to be able to easily feel the dog's ribs, just with a sort of, you know, not a thick layer of fat over the ribs, and they should have a waist. So when we're looking at them from the side, they should tuck in at their waist, and also looking down on them from above, you should be able to see a waist in front of their hips. So they're the key things to look at.
And my pup's got the opposite problem. He's eternally skinny, no matter how much he eats. And I get lots of comments on how skinny he is. And I have to say, I do feed him. I promise. It's just a skinny Malinky.
What is he? What breed is he?
He's Collie, Schnauzer, lots of things mixed.
Oh, you said Collie.
Yes,
Cross.
Collie, Schnauzer, yeah, lots of things. He looks like a little wizened old man, and he's very cute.
bless him.
So... lastly then, but not least, because I know it's a big stress for lots of puppy owners and not something they necessarily predict. Full disclosure, my mum's a vet and an animal behaviourist, and I thought when I got a puppy, I'll be fine. I've grown up with someone who knows everything. I'll be absolutely fine. And then 3 weeks in, I'm sitting on the floor going, what have I done? I've made a terrible mistake. I know nothing. So puppy behavior can be a real challenge for new owners. And as a vet, what advice would you give? When should a puppy owner know to get professional help? What's normal puppy behavior? And at what point do they really need to be going to their vet and saying, I need some support?
So I think the chewing phase is is something a lot of people struggle with. So yeah, it's normal for a puppy want to explore everything with their mouths, and it's normal that they'll try and sort of mouth objects or chew on things, or they might sort of mouth on your hand, and it's easy for that to become a bit of a game. But when that becomes something aggressive, if they start snarling, or then obviously that's problematic. Or if they're becoming very destructive, if they're destroying furniture, and then obviously that's an issue. Obviously it's very important to try and socialize them with other dogs and with people, and certainly during the pandemic we were seeing, or we still are seeing, a lot of dogs that have become very anxious around unexpected noises, or around people they don't know, or unfamiliar dogs. That kind of anxiety, if it's having a real negative effect on them, that's obviously not normal.
Mm-hmm. Before we finish, is there any one piece of advice that you would give to an owner that's listening, or to a potential puppy owner that's listening and is looking for a puppy, or thinking about getting a puppy? What would you say to them as a vet?
I would say, and I think it's what I said earlier, actually, it's great to be able to do this podcast, to be able to give some advice, but speak to your vet early in the process, speak to your vet before you get the puppy. They're the person to go to if you want to know about health of a dog breed that you're thinking of getting. They're a brilliant resource. So even if you have to pay for a consultation, that's really going to be worthwhile. So do think about doing that.
Thank you so much, Ben, for joining me today. That was really, really insightful.
No problem. Yeah, no, really, really good to take part.
That was Ben the vet, and you can find him on Instagram and TikTok. Is that right?
Yeah. So mostly, most of the content I put is on TikTok, but yeah, put a bit on Instagram as well. Follow me if you want to hear more.
Thanks, Ben. This has been the Pet Perspective by Napo.